Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So Huffington Post has a very amusing roundup video of metaphors used to explain the Goldman Sachs fraud charge. Here is about a minute of the analogy that many TV commentators have made between the Goldman subprime Abacus bonds and cars.
Sometimes crappy cars make it through the Indy 500.
Was that car, you know, were the brakes tampered with ahead of time?
I'm just going to be blunt with you. It sounds to me a little bit like selling a car with faulty brakes and then buying an insurance policy on the buyer of those cars.
Roger's right, using this analogy of the cars, if you will, with the brakes that are faulty.
So I've got a shiny red Ferrari right here. I'm going to take the engine part out here. I then bet that the car will crash. It does.
You built a shiny Ferrari, actually, without brakes.
So that it explodes, blow up.
Oh,
you didn't even build the brakes.
Whether I put the brakes in or cut the line, either way, it's going to fail.
Why are we staging car races so that people can bet on whether they'll crash when it does, you know, nothing for society?
Let's treat Goldman Sachs as if it were an antique car dealer.
Cars that explode.
Think about that. It's easy to understand a used car. But we're not talking cars here. We're talking mortgage-backed securities. My used car analogy, do you think it explained?
Yeah, I think the car analogy is great. I like to call it, it's when the house always wins.
All right, part of a mashup from the Huffington Post of metaphors for the Goldman Sachs fraud case. In this case, all car metaphors. And let's follow up now on one uncomfortable moment from the Goldman hearings yesterday. Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine asked a Goldman executive about the company's responsibility to its clients.
Could you give me a yes or no to whether or not you considered yourself to have a duty to act in the best interests of your clients?
I believe that we have a duty to serve our clients well.
A duty to serve our clients well. So we kind of danced around it. That was Daniel Sparks, former head of the mortgages department at Goldman Sachs. He wouldn't state that Goldman Sachs has an obligation to act in the best interest of its own clients. Investor beware. So let's drill down on why, from a legal, business, and ethical standpoint, Goldman Sachs or any other business would not promise to always act in the best interest of its own clients. With me for this is Barbara Kvyat, staff writer at Time Magazine and contributor to their Curious Capitalist blog. Barbara, thanks so much for coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
So what was going on in that clip? Or better yet, what was going on in the mind of the Goldman executive who wouldn't give a direct answer?
I think you picked the exact right clip to play. I was struck by that when I was watching the hearings yesterday. I mean, at the heart of this is the concept of fiduciary duty. Whether or not a financial firm has a legal obligation to act in the best interest of their clients. And some sorts of firms do. If I go to a financial planner, that person does have that fiduciary duty, and other sorts of firms don't, like broker-dealers, which is what Goldman Sachs is.
So, listeners, let's take some phone calls on this. If you're in the Wall Street arena or any other business, let's take Susan Collins' question literally. Could you give me a yes or no answer to whether or not you consider yourself to have a duty to act in the best interest of your clients? Anybody in business want to answer that or want to explain why it's not so simple as a yes or no answer? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And Barbara, can you explain a little further the distinction that you were just making?
Sure. So, you know, part of what a lot of what Goldman Sachs does is they make markets for securities. They're sort of there to stand in the middle between people who want to buy and sell securities. Stocks would be sort of the simplest example of that. And you know, they would argue that the reason they don't have fiduciary duty is because, you know, in making that market, you know, maybe they're sort of facilitating some of that buying and selling by, you know, buying and selling securities themselves. They're on the opposite side of that trade, which sort of implicitly says they're, you know, believing, you know, that this stock is going to go in the opposite direction of their client, the person buying or selling it. But that's okay, because that's sort of the way that the market gets created. What the senators were really hammering home on is you know, in the housing bubble, Goldman did a lot more than just create this market. They were actually, they actually had a hand in producing the assets that were then being bought and sold, these mortgage-backed securities and various products that are based on them, sort of these synthetic CDOs, which are incredibly complex. We won't, you know, we don't need to get into all that. But the point is that they weren't just making a market for these securities. They were actively putting them together and selling them. So what the senators were getting at is, in that situation, why don't you have a duty to this pension fund that you are selling this product, which you've created to, in order not to sell them crap, things that, that you know, are very low quality, without disclosing that
right
to them.
So Steve in Northport is calling in, a former investment banker. Steve, thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you?
Good. And so on the question of duty to act in the best interest of their clients?
Well, public companies have a fiduciary responsibility first to their shareholders, not to their clients. And the way in broker-dealers work is that you don't want to burn the client, but each client has a rating within the firm. You have your best clients and then your next best clients and then your next best clients.
Best in terms of what? Those who spend the most money with you?
Usually the ones who have the largest accounts, spend the most money, discretionary things of that nature. And the interesting thing about what the reporter just mentioned is usually when an IPO comes out, the underwriter itself has the largest short position on the street because they need an exit strategy for all of the stock that they received from the investment banking end, their warrants and options and so on and so forth. So it's really it's a broker-dealer cannot disclose to their clients that they are on the opposite side, nor is it their business, and market makers never disclose what order they're reflecting. Somebody has a bid there. You're not supposed to know whether that bid is an order from a client, whether it is an internal bid, whether it's an order from another firm. And on the offer side, you're not supposed to know that either. So, and the other thing that the senators were making comments of you're betting a stock to go down, you could short a stock for it to go up.
Do you think
create an orderly market? You don't have to short a stock to necessarily drive it down.
Do you think that Senator Collins was asking a gotcha question that wasn't actually appropriate to the situation?
It absolutely was, and the real disconnect yesterday was that they were speaking different languages, because from a trading terminology, the way the senators were phrasing it, it dumbfounded the people receiving the question, because they're in it and the senators aren't. They're using catchphrases that they really don't have the contextual understanding of what they were saying. You're betting on a stock going down, you're shorting on it. You know, two brokers could be sharing the same desk, and one says I'm buying Citibank, the other one says, well, I'm shorting it. They're sitting right next to each other in the same firm because they believe for their clients. One client says, I want Citibank. Another client says, I want a short Citibank.
So they're each acting in the interest of their clients, and together that's the firm acting in the best interest of their clients. Steve, thank you very much. I really appreciate your call. But other people are calling in kind of outraged with other examples from their own work. Catherine in Manhattan. Catherine, thank you for calling. Hi, right to the point.
Hi, thank you. Yes, this just convinces me more than ever the business world is a total other universe. I am a nurse. I'm thinking, do I look at a patient saying, should I have your best interest at heart when I'm giving you an enema or putting an IV in? Should a surgeon have your best interest at heart when he's open heart surgery? What are they talking about?
Catherine, thank you. Here's someone else in the health field, I think. Jack, you're on WNYC.
Hey, Brian, I'm a great show. I'm a pediatrician, so I have an obligation to my clients as a child to do what's in their best interest. And I have the legal authority, if the parents disagree, to go to court and try and get a court order. However, if I'm an adult physician, my obligation is to fully inform the patient, full disclosure, and let them choose. They might choose to act in ways that I feel are harmful to them, but I need to disclose the pluses and minuses. So if I'm advantaged by being a surgeon and going in to do an operation that I don't think is necessary, I'd have to disclose that. Mm-hmm. If the patient still chooses to do so, they have choice. So I think it's a matter of full disclosure here.
Thank you very much. So back to our guest from Time Magazine. Is it such a shocking notion, and you heard these analogies from a couple of callers from the healthcare field.
Mm-hmm.
Is it such a shocking notion for a business that maybe not nursing or pediatric medicine to act in their not to act in their client's best interest. In the mashup of car metaphors we just heard, some examples were of outright fraud, but some were of, you know, run-of-the-mill used car dealers routinely trying to pass off lemons in ways that are perfectly legal, just as any business wants to act in its own best economic interests, which sometimes may not be in the best interest of its customers. So is it naive to think businesses do act in the best interest of clients as a matter of course?
Well, I think what you're getting at is conflict of interest, which exists in any, you know, in any business. It exists in mine. I mean, I work for a publicly traded company, and I'm a journalist, and I sort of fancy myself a person who's also serving the public. I think that what we're struggling right now with as a nation when it comes to financial services is how best to moderate those conflicts of interest.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the last time we went through a big financial meltdown, the Great Depression, you know, we had a really simple answer, break up the banks. You know, the commercial banks had gotten into securities underwriting and investment banking, and, it caused a lot of problems, and the congressional response was, we can't moderate this conflict of interest when these businesses exist side by side in the same company. Therefore, they need to exist in separate companies. And that, you know, in a way, surprisingly, isn't really in the cards right now. I mean, all of the legislation out of both the House and the Senate, you know, tries to limit things in different ways. But there's only really one proposal, and this is from Senator Ted Kaufman, in a separate bill to really start breaking these companies down, to make them smaller, to make them more controllable. You know, partly is a means of admitting that we're human beings, and we can't handle these fundamental conflicts of interest. So maybe what we need to do is you know, design a system in which they don't exist as much.
Or I guess, and we're just about out of time, but are they trying to more clearly define the line between sales and fraud?
I mean, this gets back to, you know, to that issue of who should have, you know, fiduciary duty, you know, who should be, you know, allowed to be a full salesman and who should be allowed to or sort of be forced to sort of focus more on the interest of the client. I mean, the issue of fraud, I feel like, is sort of this whole other category that sort of get into the SEC lawsuit against Goldman Sachs.
Right. So sales, a full salesman, the way you used it, really implies that they may try to pull the wool over their client's eyes.
I mean, I buy a lot of things. I often feel like I, you know, I need to be an educated, you know, consumer, and to, you know, as a way to stand up to marketing.
Right. The educated news consumer is our best listener, and we thank Barbara Kiviat, staff writer at Time Magazine and contributor to their Curious Capitalist blog. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we go from fiduciary responsibilities in business to sunlight as the best disinfectant in government, the central tenet of the transparency movement. And we will see how that applies to city government right now with city council, or I should say city public advocate Bill de Blasio, and sunlight activist Andrew Richet coming up in just a minute.